Thank you very much, Rabbi Pruzensky, Shusser of Shechter, Rav Pruzensky, Marad Asra, Marad Rav Osei. It would be easy to say and to perhaps short-circuit the discussion this evening by saying that our Masorah is eternal and unchanging, and leave it at that. And that statement is true on one level, but simultaneously on another level is not true. So maybe let's try to just elaborate that a little bit. On a phenomenological level, and by that one means on the level of outer appearances, on the level of surface appearances, so things do change. For instance, give two types of examples, both well known. Sometimes the psak halacha on a question which has been discussed and debated amongst the Chachmei HaMasorah throughout the generations, sometimes the psak halacha the pendulum will swing at a certain point. So we live in an age when the opinion of the Vilna Gaon in terms of Zmane Hayom is the dominant opinion. There is, of course, still many communities that are also machmir for Rabbeinu Tam's opinion in Zmane Hayom, but the more dominant opinion is that of the Vilna Gaon. But that wasn't always the case. Historically, if we go back a few hundred years, so the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam in many, many areas was much more prevalent. So that's one example, again, of phenomenological change. Another example, which would seemingly be more provocative and more relevant to some of tonight's issues and foci, is the area of Chinuch HaBanos. Clearly there, again, on a phenomenological level, there's been change, that there was no such thing as formal education for girls for millennia, and now it's something. All differences of opinion of what the curriculum should be, notwithstanding, but now it's something which is just about universally taken for granted. Again, seemingly an example of change. What needs to be understood, and these are just intended as representative examples, what needs to be understood and recognized are at least three common denominators, again, to all examples of change or apparent change. First of all, in each of the cases, there is no fundamental change to the Masorah, but it's rather a dynamic which is playing out within the Masorah. So for instance, in the example we gave with the Ben HaShmoshos, the Vilna Gaon didn't come and ex nihilo and yesh me'ayin come up with a new opinion, with a new approach to Zmane Hayom. The issue was an issue which had been discussed and there had been disagreement about for hundreds of years. It's an issue which goes back to the Rishonim and the Gaonim, the opposing opinions. And as is the case with many halachic issues, so the discussion and debate amongst the Chachmei HaMasorah transcends the boundaries of individual lifetimes. The same way, Yechves, that the discussion about Chodosh in Chutzlaritz, whether or not one has to be careful about the prohibition of Chodosh in Chutzlaritz, again, is something which the discussion and debate goes on for hundreds of years. So that's an example also. So it's not something from the outside which is being imposed upon the Masorah. It's not something which, again, a change which is being affected upon the Masorah, but rather the Masorah allows for this intergenerational discussion and debate, and sometimes in Pesach Halacha, sometimes a pendulum swings, and sometimes what is the accepted opinion in some generations will be one way, and in other generations will be another way. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Mamrim, the Rambam is referring to Sanhedrin there, but the same is true for this intergenerational discussion and debate amongst Chachmei HaMasorah, that one Bezdin can disagree with the rulings and the decisions of an earlier Bezdin. And when they're dealing with Dinim Daraisa, they don't even have to meet the standard of Gadol B'Chochma B'Minyan. They have to be an outstanding Bezdin. And if so, again, there's an intergenerational discussion and debate. And that's what allows within the Masorah, again, for what on one level appears as change. And again, I guess it's a question of semantics if one wants to call it change. But it's important to understand, again, that it's phenomenologically change. But it's something, it's what the Masorah allows for because of the intergenerational debate. Similarly, in terms of the issue of Chinuch Habonos, no one, not the Chofetz Chaim, not the Belzer Rebbe, who was the first of the Gedolei Yisrael to be consulted, no one, Rachmana Litzlan, overruled the Gemara in Sota. No one said that we think differently, that we say differently. They said that they felt that the Masorah, when it gave the directive of the Gemara in Sota, where Chazal opposed imposing learning upon girls who are not obligated in Talmud Torah, that Chazal gave that directive in a time when Emunah and Havas Torah and Yerushalayim was something that were imbibed in the home through osmosis, where the tradition was so strong and so vibrant. And that in our times, that Chazal never gave such a directive. So again, change on one level, I guess you could say it is, but it's crucial to recognize that it's more of a change which is dictated by the fact that the question was different. When the question is different, so then the Masorah internally will give a different response. The same way, if you come to a Rav and you ask him a Shaila about a little bit of milk that falls into the chicken soup, so depending upon what the proportions are, you may get different answers. You'll ask the question one day, you'll get one answer. You'll ask the question the next day, you'll get a different answer. Because if the facts on the ground change, so it doesn't mean that the Masorah is changing. The answer changes, but that doesn't mean the Masorah changed. It doesn't mean the Halacha changed. It means that the Masorah internally has different responses to different situations and to different scenarios. So that's the first common denominator to be recognized when, again, dealing with examples of apparent change, that it's not change which is imposed from without, but it's rather an example, again, of an internal dynamic within the Masorah. The second common denominator, which is also very important to keep in mind, is that even these examples are very rare. That there are other examples other than the two examples we gave. We can certainly give more examples, but certainly percentage-wise, in terms of topics and areas of halacha, so it's the exception rather than the rule. That it's very rare to have these, that they do exist, but it's very rare. It's the exception rather than the rule. And the third common denominator is that in any such case, again, when on the level of appearances there is change, so that change is decided upon and authenticated by the decision of the Chachmei HaMasorah, by the decision of whoever in that generation the contemporary leading Torah scholars and authorities are. Those are the three common denominators of examples of change, again, or what appears to be change within normative halachic practice. So I think at this point, having mentioned Chachmei HaMasorah, so we can segue a little bit into to talk about our issue about Masorah in a changing world. So we need to perhaps give a little bit of a definition of what Masorah is. So the first definition that would come to mind is that Masorah is the aggregate of halachos, values, attitudes, patterns of behavior and thought which comprise our tradition. That's what Masorah is. But the truth is that that definition is sorely deficient in one respect. And to try to explain that, I'd just like to share the following. Many years ago, I asked the Rav Zichron Levracha what the background was to his essay, Isha Halacha. What was the, sort of what prompted him to write it? What was the story of the genesis of Isha Halacha? And he answered that he had been invited to give a talk about what is Halacha. That was the invitation that had been extended. And he said that he accepted, but on the condition that he wouldn't talk about what Halacha was, but he would talk about who Isha Halacha was. And then the preparation for that talk ultimately became Isha Halacha. So why was it that the Rav changed the topic from talking about Halacha again as, again, the abstract noun, the discipline of Halacha, to insisting that he talk about Ish or Ishe Halacha? Because Halacha isn't only a compilation of do's and don'ts, of rules and regulations. Halacha ultimately is a way of experiencing the world. It's a way of experiencing life. It's a way of relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a way of experiencing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that can't be captured as long as one only talks about Halacha in the abstract. To really depict that, you have to be talking about actual Ishei HaHalacha, who embodied and personified and lived all that Halacha is intended to be. And the same is true for Masorah as well. As long as we just talk about Masorah in the abstract, we're missing something crucial. The Chachmei HaMasorah are not just incredibly reliable transmitters. I used to say tape recorders. I'm not sure what the iPods now or whatever the more current description should be of tradition. But the Chachmei HaMasorah are an intrinsic and integral part of what the Masorah is. The Chachmei HaMasorah, again, not only transmit, again, all those halachos, values, attitudes, again, patterns of behavior and thought, but they also interpret and apply it for us. And thereby, through their interpretations, through their applications, enrich our Masorah. So one can't really talk about the Masorah without talking about the Chachmei HaMasorah. And in that context, the Rav Zichron Levracha had a very famous he'orah where he commented on the on a phrase in the Rambam in Perek Gimel of Hilchos Tshuva, where the Rambam is talking about, the Rambam lists all those in Perek Gimel of Hilchos Tshuva who forfeit their chelek in Olam Haba. So the Rambam says that amongst those is a person who is kofer b'Torah, if a person denies Torah. And he says if a person is kofer b'perusha v'hamakrish magideho, if a person denies the Torah Shebal Peh, the oral interpretation of Torah, he's a heretic who, rachmanu litzlan, forfeits his share in Olam Haba. But in addition, the Rambam also adds the phrase v'hamakrish magideho, one who contravenes those who transmit the Masorah. So how is that? Why isn't that simply repetitious? You already said hakofe b'perusha. If you're denying the oral transmission, the oral tradition regarding Torah, So that's what the Magideha, that's what they say also. So what does Makrish Magideha add? But that's exactly this point, again, that the anyone who, again, not only questions the transmission of what was taught in previous generations, but one who denies the authority of Chachmei HaMasorah to interpret, to apply, and denies the validity of those interpretations and applications is also being kofir, is also denying our Masorah. So who are Chachmei HaMasorah? So I'll try to give a little bit of a thumbnail sketch, but the words will ring hollow. Anyone who's ever had the zchus to see one of the Chachmei HaMasorah up close will realize that words don't capture it. And so much of the confusion nowadays, and so much of what is said wouldn't be said if more people had the zchus and the ability to appreciate who the Chachmei HaMasorah really are. In another drasha, building off of a Gemara in Maseches Brachos, which talks about how Chachamim can resemble a sar lifnei hamelech, or an eved lifnei hamelech, an officer before the king, or a servant before the king. So the Rav develops the idea that, again, that the Chachmei HaMasorah really are both. They're both sarim as well as avadim. A sar, an officer in the sense that they rule over the corpus of Torah. They rule over, they have an extraordinary mastery. Not the kind of mastery that one gets by knowing how to use the computer well. They have an extraordinary mastery over thousands of years of rabbinic literature, of Shas, of Rishonim, of Shulchan Aruch, and more. An extraordinary mastery. Asar lifnei HaMelech, again, they're sovereign. In that area, you can't mention a Gemara, you can't mention a Seif in Shulchan Aruch that they don't have mastery over. Kesar lifnei HaMelech. On the other hand, they're also ke'eved lifnei HaMelech. The piety, the humility, and in the most positive sense of the word, the slavish devotion to Torah is also equally remarkable and equally extraordinary. To give an example in terms of, again, the mastery in terms of encyclopedic knowledge, the mastery also means insight with penetrating and keen insight as well, but just in terms of the encyclopedic knowledge, Rav Hartman, the one who edits the Blue Maharals with the notes, tells the following story, that when he was working on one passage in the Maharal, so he found the Maharal quotes a Chazal, and he couldn't find the Chazal. So he did the best he could, and he consulted a lot of prominent Talmidei Chachamim and wasn't able. So once he was in Bnei Brak, and then Reb Chaim Kanievsky was walking on the street. So he went over to him and he told him about what the Gor Aryeh, what the Maharal mentions in Gor Aryeh. And he says it's a Chazal and he can't find it. So he describes the scene as follows. Again, which he experienced, which he witnessed. He describes the scene as follows. That Reb Chaim Kanievsky stops, and for a moment, just a moment, and says, Nishtin Bavli, Nishtin Yerushalmi, Nishtin Tosefta, and continues like that, and then says, Efshar Mashmos in Tikkunei Zohar, and tells him what parak to look in Tikkunei Zohar. So he was reviewing, I don't know, maybe someone who specializes in neuropsychology can explain. I can't fully explain, but he was reviewing Kol HaTorah Kula, and he was looking for the source, and faster than you can do a word search on the computer. So that's just the extraordinary mastery on an encyclopedic level. in terms of the depth and profundity of understanding that the Chachmei HaMasorah have. So my Chavrus and I have been learning recently one of the Shtiklach Torah in Reb Chaim, in Hilchos Shabbos. You learn that, you try to learn it, you can spend days, you can spend weeks, and finally appreciate some of what he's saying, you get a little bit of a sense of who the Chachmei HaMasorah are. The piety, the humility, again, the slavish devotion to Torah. So little wonder, again, we mentioned in terms of the common denominators, that the third of the common denominators is that the crucial decision, the crucial judgment call to be made. So we said that on the one hand there is change, on the other hand there isn't change. That the change is only when it's within, when the halacha says that this is a different situation, which internally the Masorah dictates a different response. It's not always 100% clear, it's not always clear at all to us. Well, is that what's happening, or is this change which is being imposed from without? So little wonder that the decision, that judgment call is given, again, to the Chachmei HaMasorah, because that ultimately, there's no such thing as being a specialist in a narrow area of Torah. That there is a certain intuition that a person has, a certain understanding that a person has on Dav Beis and Brachos, based on everything he's learned from the rest of Torah. There's a Tosefta in Masechah Sanhedrin that says, Kol HaTorah Kul is Inyan Echad. So it's not the case that the difference between the Vilna Gaon and me is that I know Brachos Dav Beis and the Vilna Gaon knew everything else. No, the difference between the Vilna Gaon and me is on Brachos Dav Beis. That the Vilna Gaon's understanding of Brachos Dav Beis is informed because of his thinking is in sync with that of Torah, based on that, again, extraordinary mastery of all of Torah. The more Torah one learns, so the more one thinks, and the more one is attuned, and the more one can intuit what Torah really means. So there's no such thing as being a specialist in a narrow area of Torah. And that's why the Gedolim throughout the generations weren't specialists. They were Gedolim in all areas of Torah. I think that the Rav said about Reb Chaim that he understood the neshama of Torah. Now that's how he expressed this idea, that to be attuned and to amoshel amadav adoma. You have it can be a couple, it can be a husband and wife, it can be a very close parent-child relationship, Rebbe-Talmud relationship. You work together year after year, hand in hand, so you begin to become attuned to what the other person thinks, how the other person thinks. And it's that which the Chachmei HaMasorah, again, each one in his own individual way, each one with his individuality, but it's that which they possess which entitles them and not us to an opinion on these issues. What's especially sad and painful about the recent advocacy for women rabbis, it not only is a distortion of that particular area of halacha, but it's a distortion of the whole Masorah, because those advocating are not really entitled to an opinion. It's not an insult to say that someone doesn't belong to the rather elite group of Chachmei HaMasorah, and that obviously is the case that none of the contemporary Chachmei HaMasorah have spoken in favor of such an initiative, have given the slightest indication that there's any room or any legitimacy to it. So it's a distortion, not only of this particular area of halacha, it's a distortion of the entire masorah, because that's not how our masorah functions, and it undermines the integrity of the entire masorah. In terms of the issue itself, in terms of perhaps trying to understand a little bit, and here I'm giving you what's not my opinion, but my understanding of why the Chachmei HaMasorah don't think there's room for any such thing. Traditionally, historically, smicha always represented svara. Receiving smicha meant, it didn't mean that a person, nowadays, smicha historically, what it always meant is that this person was now recognized and had now been given the imprimatur to go become a rav in a community where his word would be law, where his word would be rule, and where people would have to accept, if appointed as rav in that community, would have to accept his word, and that he could exercise a certain svara, that he had the Torah knowledge that authorized him to exercise a certain svara. That's what the title rav always represented. That's what smicha always represented. So we know that the halacha says, precludes women from positions of svara. How is this different? How is this issue different than, let's say, the issue of chinuch habanos that we mentioned at the outset? So the issue is very different. The issue of chinuch habanos, sometimes we lack a sense for history and historical context. Chinuch habanos historically wasn't a concession or a response to any kind of feminist movement or demand. The again, quote, changes on the level on which it's to be considered a change came about long before feminism existed, when the Chafetz Chaim wrote his famous lines in Likutei Halachos, and then in the letter that was published in the Beis Yaakov Journal, and when the Rav advocated his views on Chinuch Habanos, it was long, long before there was any type of feminism in terms of and certainly in the orthodox world. So it wasn't a question of compromising with some kind of external values and being influenced, but it was rather, again, a recognition on the part and decision on the part of the Chachmei HaMasorah that the directive that the Masorah provides for this situation is different. In light of the fact that smicha historically has always, again, represented svara, that a musmach, again, is entitled to exercise svara if accepted in a certain community. So once that is correctly and accurately understood, so then the push for women rabbis is a push for not responding to changing conditions, but is a push for changing Masorah. And that's what the Chachmei HaMasorah see very clearly, and that's why it hasn't been given the slightest bit of support. Let's say we hear such an explanation, let's say you hear a better explanation than the one I just tried to give, and it doesn't resonate. So what should one's response be then? So you'll hear a better explanation than the one I just tried to outline, and it doesn't resonate. So when the Sifri says, Lo sosu min adava sheyagidu l'cho yomin u'smol, so we know that Chazal famously darshan, al yomin shehu smol v'al smol shehu yomin. That we have to listen to the Chachmei Masori, even if they tell us left is right and right is left. So l'chore doesn't really mean that they're actually wrong. The Gemara in Horios talks about what happens if the Sanhedrin makes a mistake. What it seems to mean is that even though I can't understand what they're saying, I think that what they're saying is they're confusing right and left, and they're confusing left and right. So Chazal are telling us that I should recognize that that's due to my meager understanding. And it's not necessarily, they're not ultimately. Again, maybe it looked like to some person that when Chinuch Habanus was being advocated, that the Chachamim were confusing right and left, left and right. So you have to listen, because the truth is that ultimately they're not confusing left and right, right and left, but it's rather because of our lesser and meager understanding that it appears that way to us. So even if the explanation doesn't resonate, that's where our humility is supposed to come into play, in recognizing and deferring that these, again, are the Chachmei HaMasorah with their, again, extraordinary mastery and with dazzling insights, and again, that slavish devotion to Torah, that they're the ones who are the Sarei HaTorah to be able to interpret and apply the Masorah. In the sensitive area of tzniyus as well, it also requires, again, the keen understanding to be able to draw the line between which aspects of tzniyus are time-conditioned, alufi hamakom v'hazman, and which aspects of tzniyus are perennial and unchanging. I don't know too many people who think that once upon a time it was pritzesdik for a woman to be outside on the street. I don't know too many people who think that that's true anymore, and that's what tzniyusdik behavior entails nowadays. On the other hand, in terms of sort of objective norms of dress, so that hasn't changed. That hasn't changed. There are other areas, perhaps, which seem to us more gray areas, where it's harder for us, again, to be able to make that call. Is this an aspect of tznius which is l'fi hamakom v'hazman, which is time-conditioned, and that in our social setting, it's acceptable, even though once upon a time it wasn't? Well, no, maybe this belongs to those aspects of tznius which are absolute and unchanging. So there too, again, we look to Chachmei HaMasorah to be able to intuit, interpret, and apply for us how the, again, principles as well as details of tznius govern our behavior today. The Parnassa was also on my list, as well as as Rabbi Prusansky noted, as well as the dot dot dot. But I think rather than try to run through other topics superficially, I would just conclude with the Reb Chaim Volozhiner in Ruach HaChaim comments on the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos of Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai U'Mesor LeYoshua, Yoshua LeZakenim. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner correlates each of the links in the Masorah with the outstanding humility that each of them possessed. And the fact that Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai is directly attributable to the fact that Ha'ish Moshe Anuv Me'od Mikol Odom Asher Al Pnei Adam. And he continues with that, with Yahshua, with the Zikain, with every link in the Masorah. So the same way that this characterized and continues to characterize Chachmei HaMasorah, that Anuv, that humility, so the more that we cultivate on our part that Anova, so maybe the more that we'll be Zocha to understand their interpretations and applications, and the less often we'll need to invoke the halacha of Al Yomin Shehu Smol and Al Smol Shehu Yomin, but rather that we'll be privileged to understand and recognize the wisdom and sagacity of recognizing what's Yomin and what's Smol, even in what to many people appears as a changing and confusing world.